Welcome to break number 64. We are in Nehemiah chapter 2. Let's look to verse 1. And it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. So, you know, Nehemiah had a pretty good testimony with the king. Wherefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. So the king recognized that Nehemiah was bothered. So it was pretty obvious that something was bothering him. And what about us? Now, with what's going on, and I'll save that sermon for another time, I guess. There's no point in it. But from what we learn from Paul and the risen Savior, because we know how God will handle the troubles and deal with the things that are going on out there, we should, in our countenance, according to Paul, should have a joy, a thankfulness, a peace, a calmness, have an understanding of what's going on, even though things are the way they are. But then, like Paul says, but then. See, so we should have a different kind of a countenance that Nehemiah was showing there. Now, why are we looking at Nehemiah then if everything Nehemiah is doing so far is wrong for our example today? Well, this is just all introduction to get us up to what we learn from these obstacles. So I guess we can get out of this also that if you're going to preach and try to teach and live the Old Testament manner, then you're going to have these sad countenances. You're going to have these frustrations. You're going to have fastings, and you're going to have confessions. You're going to have all these things taking place. You're going to try to keep those commandments. And when you don't, like I say, you're going to confess them. You're going to have that kind of an Old Testament life. And like I said in the earlier part of this thing, our whole life is based on the New Testament, and yet we know the New Testament is after Christ had died. And we know what Paul says in Romans 15, whatsoever things were written aforetime are written for our learning. So we're learning from Nehemiah, and that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. So we should be able to have a lot of comfort, even learning from Nehemiah. So his countenance and our countenance today, it still should be different. Even though it's tough, what we see, it's hard to see your kids go the way they go. It's hard to see your job go the way it goes. It's hard to be around all this stuff. And the political conversations are getting pretty nasty now. And it's stressful for so many people. It's just like, what's the point? But again, let's go back to, you'll see where we're going to this thing. Then he says, after the king says, there's nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was sore afraid. So Nehemiah was afraid because the king saw him feeling the way he was. And he said unto the king, let the king live forever. Isn't that interesting how Nehemiah and these Old Testament guys talk to the authorities? Even Paul says the same thing. They kind of lift the king up. They lift up these people. They lift up their leaders. And then they say what they got to say. But they give their little praise to him. And he says, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said unto the king. Now, I've always found this to be an amazing place. You know, we talk about fasting of prayer. Well, here is a fast. Here is a fast prayer. King asked Nehemiah question. Nehemiah prays and answers the question. That had to be pretty quick. That's a good illustration of praying without ceasing. It's just that we never do stop. Sometimes I wonder if I'm just thinking to myself, or am I praying? That kind of a question. Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldst send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. Now, I want to take a break, kind of a little bunny trail this thing right here, where Nehemiah says, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight. Now, we know that the king had never seen a sad countenance with Nehemiah, so he could tell something was wrong. So Nehemiah says, you know, if it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in your sight, well, we look at something. We have our bosses, or maybe some of you are a boss. And I think of these verses quite often, which goes against a lot of the workplace attitude to the people at work. And it's tough. We're working in places that's not comfortable. We're working in places that are ungodly. We're working in places where the language is terrible. We're working in places where we have to do things that are gonna burn in the judgment seat of Christ for us, and they're gonna cause people themselves to burn in their judgment. So it's a rough thing to be a worker, but you know, we have to work someplace. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, about these are some verses that deal with us as workers in the workplace. Verse 1. Let as many servants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, that the name of God and his doctrine be not blasphemed. How's that? We should be the Christian in the workplace. It was a number of years ago that people would hire Christians because they knew they would be honest, they knew they would be hard workers, they knew they could be trusted, et cetera, et cetera. And now the tables are so turned that they don't want to hire Christians, and all they got to do is get out there in the web world on the internet and check on your name and find a website that you're a former pastor preaching all this kind of stuff, and they don't want to hire the Christian kind of a guy. But in this case, for us as Christians, we should count our masters worthy of all honor. Isn't that tough about your boss? That the name of God and his doctrine be not blasphemed. Because we are the Christian, we should follow our boss and count him worthy of all honor. And if we don't do that, here's the tough part. If we don't do that towards our bosses, then we're blaspheming the name of God and his doctrine. That's tough. And they that have believing masters, see, that previous was for a lost master. How's that? A lost boss. How tough is that? And they that have believing masters, let them not despise them because they are brethren, but rather do them service because they are faithful and beloved, partakers of the benefit. These things teach and exhort. And if you go on to verse 3, you see that somebody who doesn't teach that, you see what God thinks about that person, that they don't teach verses 1 and 2. It also goes into verse 3 and 5, 4, 5 about Bible correctors. But along with Bible correctors are the people that don't teach how you should be in your workplace. That's a pretty tough little series of verses in there. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ, not with eye service, as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. And I know that there are some people that, I know of some men especially, that have been the Christian at work, and nowadays they really don't like that. It's almost like they expect you to be a liar. They want you to cheat. They want you to cheapen up the product, get rid of this quality thing. They don't want you to be the Christian at work. Isn't that amazing? They would rather have you be like that than a hardworking Christian, not swearing, no dirty joking type of a worker. So I know some people have lost their jobs because they're Christians. You can't prove it because then you could get them for it. But, you know, but we are just to look at our bosses. And Nehemiah had a good testimony with the king. And we should have a good testimony with our boss. Even if we're doing a job we don't really appreciate doing. Titus chapter 2, verse 9. Exhort servants to be obedient unto their masters and to please them well in all things, not answering again. Don't talk back to your bosses. Not purloining, that's stealing little bitty things, but showing all good fidelity that they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in all things. So we're not doing these things to man-please the boss. We're being that way because it pleases God. You get fired, you get fired. And that's not easy to say. Been there, done that a number of times. But I think in some cases, I was that prideful little Christian man who was saying things and I wasn't doing what I should have been doing as my job. So I'm doing that here. I'm trying to do my best as a Christian man within this system and doing my stuff and obedient to the boss. And I could talk about that for quite a while, but I won't. But I've had to put myself in that position. And that's a position of growth, which you have to. That's pleasing God. When Nehemiah says, "If it pleased the king, and if I serve and I found favor in thy sight," And he did. And so then back to verse 6 here. And the king said unto me, now I don't know why this is in here. In parentheses, the queen also sitting by him. Is this something interesting about that? Maybe someday I'll figure that out, or God will show me or whatever. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thy journey be? And well, when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. It wasn't this Christian guy, well, I'm going to do this, and I've got to be gone. I don't know how long I'll be gone, but I expect to have my job when I come back, and I need to go do this. And I know that a lot of people pull that on your bosses. You got a job to do, you need to do your job. So it pleased the king to send me, and I sent him a time. Maybe God threw that in there about the queen also sitting by him, showing us that the king could do this without his wife's directives. I don't know, because it never does say the queen also sitting by him and said to him, you know, none of that, just queen's there, and here's what the king says to Nehemiah. Moreover, I said unto the king in verse 7, if it please the king, let the letters be given to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come unto Judah. Now, I thought this was interesting because Nehemiah is asking the king to give him some governmental protection. Have these people, have them understand what I'm doing. I'm coming over. I'm going to look to Jerusalem. So tell these people what's going on. And a letter unto Asaph in verse 8, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace which appertain to the house, for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. See, so Nehemiah needed materials. He needed to have some help. And the king's going to give it to him. And so, for me, we can use our positions. We can use our jobs. We can be within there. And we can use some of the laws or whatever. If we work ourselves through that, we can still be the Christian. And we can still throw some things in different places. And I won't talk about that directly because that would expose some of the things I get going or have going. But we can get some of that from the king of the forest or whatever, as it says there in verse 8. Finished up in verse 9, then I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. He didn't even go as a lone ranger. He even had the governmental support for that thing. Now, we'll continue on in 65.